Today we're talking about the, last week we talked about the Nazareth rationality. Remember what that was? That was Bruner's term, rationality. Nazareth rationality is how people are going to, Jesus' kingdom message is going to be accepted by people in a certain way. They're going to respond to it. They have to deal with it some way. And one way is the Nazareth rationality, and that is they attack the messenger personally. Remember that? They attacked Jesus personally. They said disparaging things about his family. All true. And Jesus didn't respond. See, we have to know as God's people how to respond. Today we're talking about the Herodian morality. Now that's my word. I made that term up. Because Herod Antipas, the story that Teresa just read, there's so much in that story and so interesting what goes on in there and the relationship that goes on between the people in that story. And actually today is going to be introduction to that story. I told Carolyn I doubt I would get to one verse of that story today, and I probably won't, because I just want to talk to you today about something that's really important, something that we need to do. You know, I heard someone tell me years ago, and I think they were right, that everything we do in life, or most everything we do in life, and I'm going to think of my own actions, maybe you want to think about yours, is to get the approval of that of those whom we love, or to get the approval of that which we love. Does that make sense? Most everything you do is to gain the approval of that which you value. Listen, something I've learned. I had a birthday here recently, so I've reached another decade in my life. It is rarely popular to speak the moral will of God. Rarely popular, if ever popular. But when public opinion polls show that the majority of people differ with God's opinion, with God's position on moral and social issues, we're going to talk about moral and social issues. Hot topic today, isn't it? When public opinion polls, and by the way, that's how we're governed. Isn't that sad? The bedrock of what is right and wrong is based on a public opinion poll. And when those polls differ from God's position, we as the people of God must not waver. There's a late night satirist. I do not watch him. I don't really like his program at all. I've seen just snippets of it. His name's Stephen Colbert, and I think my boys know who this is. I've heard them talk about him. And he, you want to know how far we've sunk in this public opinion poll thing as setting the benchmark of our morality in this country? He came up with a new term. Just out of jest, he called a new word called truthiness. Truthiness. And he did that when we had a particular president in the office some years ago who had a little bit of problem with the truth. That depends on what the definition of the word is. Kind of inane statements. And he came up with this term, truthiness. And he defined it, Stephen Colbert, a devout secularist. He said, truthiness is, the truth is whatever will fit the circumstance or the situation that you find yourself in. That truth is how you want things to be. The truth for you is what you want to be right, not necessarily what is right. And the president of the Merriam-Webster Dictionary Company, I think his name is John Morris, he reluctantly, if you look in a dictionary, you're going to see this word, truthiness. they interviewed him, and he said, I reluctantly put this word in the dictionary, but he said, I'm going to because it has become so iconic of our culture. He said, it appears that truth is up for grabs. Look, we can't waver on these things. Jesus standing before Pilate, there's the classic example of truth, right? You know, that statement, that classic statement by Pilate. And Jesus says, when he's standing before Pilate, he says, I came into the world to testify about truth. And then he says something interesting, Jesus. He says, anyone who is on the side of truth, I love that statement out of Jesus. Anyone who's on the side of truth will listen to what I have to say. Those not on the side of truth won't listen to what I say. And then Pilate, what does Pilate say to him? Right. What is truth? You see that nothing has changed. What is truth? Is there a bedrock of morality? Is there a bedrock on social issues? Are certain things right? Are certain things wrong? And when the public opinion polls, imagine the audacity of that statement anyway. The public opinion differ from God's opinion on moral and social issues. We must not waver. Teresa read a story about John the Baptizer, the first Christian evangelist, the slightly older second cousin of the one. And he was the very first Christian evangelist who brought the kingdom message. He didn't waver. And here's why we can't waver. Remember Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount said that broad is the road that leads to destruction, and many people are on that road. Why do we need to speak? I want you to key in on that word. Speak the truth. Don't just think it. Speak it. Have some courage and stand up and say, what is God's will? What is God's position on these issues? So when you read that statement about the way being broad that leads to destruction, and there are many people who are on that. Now you understand God's laws, don't you? Now we understand God's position on these things. God is not just arbitrarily saying, this is wrong and this is right. God knows that if people go on that broad road that many are on, public opinion polls, that it leads to destruction. So God does not want to see his supreme creation destroyed, humanity. His way, he knows, God knows, his way, his kingdom message, rather than destroying humanity, leads to humanity becoming eternal. You see, Herod in this story is on the broad road that is leading to destruction. Why? What's happened? The Herodian morality. Herod is blown by any wind. Herod is very concerned about public opinion, and particularly the opinion of Herodias. And we're going to deal with Herodias next week. My mom used to read me Aesop's Fables. And in that book, he has hundreds of fables, and there's this one fable that I thought about when I read this story about Herod and Herodias and John the Baptizer. And there were these father and son that they bought a donkey, and they're leading this donkey that they bought back to their farm, and they come across a group of people that come the other way on the road, and they say to the father and son, "Why are you leading that donkey and not one of you riding on that donkey?" And so, trying to please those people, the father puts the son up on the donkey. So now the father's leading the donkey, and they're going on down the road. The son is riding. They come to another group of people, and this group looks at the son on the donkey, and they say, "How disrespectful to your elders that you would have that kid up there riding on the donkey, and you, the father, are walking. That's totally wrong. Get the son off the donkey, and father, you get up on the donkey." So wanting to please that group, the father gets up on the donkey, and the son leads the donkey. They go a little bit farther down the road. They run into another group of people. And this group of people say, "That is a total waste of that donkey. He can easily carry both of you." So wanting to please that group, they both got up on the donkey and rode the donkey. Finally, they come to another group. And this group says, This was PETA, okay? This group was PETA. And they said to the father and son riding on a donkey, "That is totally inhumane for you to be riding that beast. You should get off of that beast, and you two should be carrying that donkey, for heaven's sakes." So the father and son got off the donkey, wanting to please that group, public opinion. That's the way the wind was blowing. And they racked their brains, "How can we carry this donkey?" So they devised, they went into the woods and they cut a pole. And they put this pole between their shoulders and they turned the donkey upside down and they tied the donkey's feet to the pole so the donkey was hanging upside down and they were carrying the pole. Now they come to a stream. And it was a wide stream that they had to cross while carrying the donkey. Well, the donkey's hanging upside down. They carry the donkey into the stream, hanging upside down. The donkey drowns before they get across the stream. They get to the other side of the stream. They've lost everything. Destruction. You see. And Aesop said the moral of the story is, basically, don't waver to public opinion because it will lead to destruction. I take a look at our nation. And I'm going to take on head-on some social and moral issues. And I'm telling you I'm doing this because this story gripped me, and I understand that the Herodian morality has crept into the church. You know, we have a sanctuary here, don't we? I got a bee in my bonnet. I'm going to let it buzz a little bit this morning. This sanctuary is other, isn't it? Other. Do you know what I mean by that? The church is... have become so concerned with being like the world. Well, look, our sanctuaries even look like a theater. Our sanctuaries look like a gymnasium. And they do their best to downplay the fact we're coming into a room in which we are going to worship the Creator Covenant God. And therefore, in my theology and in my opinion and my background, and I'm biased on this, I have a bigotry on this probably, but it should be different, shouldn't it? The Broadway leads to destruction. Abortion. Destruction. We need to speak this. The issues that is in our news every day. Same-sex marriage is a big topic this week in Utah. Destruction. If you don't think that leads to destruction, then I'm going to invite you to read a work. I'm going to invite you to read The Fall of the Roman Empire. And you look at what the historians say caused the destruction of Rome and the society of Rome. Broadway leads to destruction. God knows that. He loves humanity. He knows if you go the broad road, you're going to be destroyed. And you know who else knows it? The enemy. Make no mistake, the enemy hates you. The enemy wants to destroy you. He's insanely jealous of what you have as God's people, something he will never have, something he forfeited forever. And he wants you to be destroyed. Herod's on that road. Why do we speak it? Why did John speak it? Because John knows Herod's on the broad road. What an unloving thing for you to do. Not to speak the truth. How unloving for me with my sons. Not to speak the truth to them. We don't govern by popular opinion. We don't take opinion polls and decide what the new morality is and what is right and what is wrong. And by the way, the majority of people in the nation think that abortion is okay. Oh, okay. Well, then I guess it is okay. I guess that God was wrong all along. We're the people of God. We speak for him. John the Baptist is speaking for God. Why? Because he fears God a heck of a lot more than he fears a king. Who do you fear? Whose approval do you want? Because that will guide your behavior. That will determine what you speak. John the Baptist dares to meddle in the social and moral life of a king because he fears God. He wants to please God. If you don't have a visceral belief in God, then you won't want to please him. If you believe more in the world's kingdom message, you will want to please it. You know, when I read this about John, I admire him so much. You've got to admire that, don't you? That kind of integrity. John, when John speaks, there's such integrity. And do you know why? Do you want to have integrity? John has integrity because when he speaks God's opinions, God's word, God's position, and there is nothing more integritous than God's word. John has integrity here. Here's where to get to the heart of the message. Jesus' kingdom message and the world's kingdom message, now listen, are never going to peacefully coincide. Never. And despite our best efforts to meld the kingdom message of Jesus into the world's view, it's never going to have a peaceful coexistence. John is not Christian light. Christian light. The world is never going to like your message. Never going to like your message. And Paul says quite clearly in 1 Corinthians, the first chapter, he says this. He says, the world's never going to buy into your message. Stop trying to make this message about Jesus' kingdom sexy. Well, that was interesting. That was really... It was. Okay, stop trying to make the message about Jesus' kingdom attractive to the world. It's not. Paul says if you do that, and if you use clever words to do that, you empty the cross of its effect. I'm going to into the grocery store, and Brock is after me to write this book that connects physiology with theology. And here I came up with one today. Brock's not here, but maybe he'll listen to this. And Brock gave me a little book, actually, that I'm supposed to write all these ideas down in to write this book. You go into the grocery store, and you go down the aisle, and you see everything is fat-free, right? Light sour cream, light half and half, light milk, light butter, light, everything's light. They've taken the fat out, which is such a horrendous mistake, if you know anything about my stance on this. because that fat is so important for energy and for joint health, and it also has the fat-soluble vitamins in it. They've taken the fat out at saying, well, if you eat fat-free things, you'll lose weight. Well, how's that working for you? Mm-hmm. You know what happens when you eat fat-free things? You're hungry. You know what you do when you're hungry? You eat carbs. You know what carbs do? They make you fat. Fat-free is not the way to go. Fat-free is like the real food, but we've taken some things out, so it's not really harmful to you, they say. It is extremely harmful. By the way, don't drink decaf coffee. This is complete off the subject. If you drink all of these things, if you drink decaf coffee, you're making a mistake. Just drink less coffee. Because decaf, in order to make it decaffeinated, they put 100 chemicals on those beans to draw the caffeine out. So you're drinking a cup of chemicals. Same with Diet Pop. You're drinking formaldehyde when you're drinking Diet Pop. Don't drink Diet Pop. Drink less pop. I don't think you should drink pop at all. Okay, Dick, sorry. But back to the subject. People, how attracted are you to fat-free foods? Let me ask you that. How eager are you to bite into a nice fat-free thing that has zero taste? Me either. People are not attracted to Christian light. You know what I mean? They're not attracted to it. And it doesn't satisfy. Being Christian light does not help anybody. It doesn't help the world. If John is Christian light here with Herod, the entire message to Herod is lost. We are to be other than. We're not to be like. What does Jesus say about that? Jesus says about Christian light people, Jesus says, I will spit you out of my mouth if you're lukewarm. I'd rather you were hot. I'd rather you were cold. And because you're lukewarm, I'm going to spit you out of my mouth. Let me tell you something, brothers and sisters. The world does the same thing. The world is not attracted to a wimpy Christian. You're not going to be liked by the world with this message, ever. You're not going to amalgamate it with their theology, ever. We're to be different than the world. We're not to be a facsimile of the world. I work in alternative medicine. See, the kingdom message of Jesus is an alternative, isn't it? It's an alternative way to live. Like Dallas Willard paraphrased Jesus' kingdom message, review your plans for living and take advantage of this remarkable new opportunity. We're an alternative to what the world has offered people. I work in alternative medicine, as I said. When a lot of people that come in to see me have tried the conventional medicine way, and it has failed them. Otherwise, generally, they wouldn't come to an alternative route, would they? If the conventional works, you won't try alternative, will you? If I'm in alternative medicine and a patient comes in to see me who has tried the conventional route and I try to recreate a light version of alternative, you see, I try and copy the conventional medicine so that I'm like them. That's not what they're after. The world is not after that. True godliness is either going to be exceedingly attractive to this side of the church, and true godliness is going to be exceedingly unattractive to this side of the church, let's say. And the worst thing you can do is to be Christian light and try and be in the middle of the church because you attract no one. You repel everybody. I thought of also this week about Governor Christie. I think this is a good example of what I'm talking about. And there's no political statement in what I'm going to tell you here. This is just what has happened. You remember the election between Obama and Romney? And it was really, Romney was ahead in the polls up to the last week. Remember that? Then a hurricane comes, and it wipes out a lot of New Jersey. Governor Christie is a Republican governor. So Obama, behind in the polls at this time, goes to New Jersey, and Governor Christie famously hugs him. Remember that iconic picture in the news? He hugs Obama, and he just praises Obama for all of his good help and his work. And many people say that gave Obama the election. That Christie's endorsement, it was an endorsement of Obama at that point, gave Obama the election. Christie, Governor Christie, tried to be, listen, these politicians have got this all figured out. No, nothing is done by accident by these guys. And I know that what Christie was doing there was he was saying, now I'm going to show the country that I can appeal to both sides. I can be a Republican, but I can also be friends to the Democrat. And maybe if I do that, Christie's thinking, the Democrats will like me. Maybe they'll like me. And then maybe when I run for president in 2016, which he's probably going to, that the Democrats will cross over a lot of them and vote for me because they can see I'm a good guy, embrace the president, he's a Democrat. He tried to get the Democratic Party, this is what the pundits say, to like him. What's happened to Governor Christie this week? Well, you know that he's embroiled in a scandal up here in New Jersey because some people on his staff apparently shut down a lane into the George Washington Bridge leading into between New Jersey and New York and caused a massive traffic jam. And Governor Christie says he didn't have anything to do with it and that it was just his staff. Well, that's just where the story is right now. And I was watching some of the commentators talk about that this week, and they said, not one Democrat came to help him. Not one. Silence from the White House. Support for Governor Christie. People don't like a person who tries to be all things to all people. Be who God intended you to be. You see, that completely backfired for Governor Christie. His vision of getting the Democrats to like him completely went away. The Democrats don't like him. The world, newsflash, world doesn't like you. They don't like your kingdom message. You're not going to be Christian light. You're not going to change the message and soft peddle it so that you don't offend anybody. You're not going to change the message so that maybe they'll like you. Maybe if we change our sanctuaries to look like just any other building and take these crosses out, by the way, maybe the world will like us. Solomon tried that. Solomon got in trouble when he built a temple. He got into financial trouble, and he said, how can I get the pagans in here to support it and give some money for the temple? You know what he did? He put 2 golden calves at the entrance to the temple. Yeah, absolutely. Solomon. 50 years later, the nation split. Destruction. We are very much narrow road people. What is worse today? Which of these two things is worse? Behavior that is wrong or calling that behavior out? Which takes the most heat today in our world? Oh, you know the answer. If you call out behavior like John, you must not have her. In our world, it's the person who calls out the behavior that is attacked, not the behavior. Why is this important? And why is it important? Do you love your fellow human beings? If you're Christian light to them, you're doing a tremendous disservice to them because you are saying to them, in essence, it's okay to stay on that broad road. It's all right. I don't want to judge you. And I certainly don't want to say that what you're doing is wrong. And you can stay on that broad road. You know what you're doing? You're signing their death warrant. That leads to destruction. You're no friend of theirs. One of Teresa's favorite verses, and she turned me on to this, is in Zechariah. It's in chapter 8. Why is it important for us to do this, and why is it important for you to speak the truth? You know, that's what's... You talk about Roe v. Wade. What happened there? God's people need to speak that this is wrong. And you know something else? You'll see my... Everybody knows that's wrong. Everybody knows that's murder. Because we can sanitize it. Because we can keep it in a clinical setting. Because we can keep it so nobody sees it. Because we have the medical expertise to do it. Has nothing to do with the morality involved in that issue. How does something like Gosnell happen? Remember Gosnell, that doctor in Philadelphia? Who's in prison for the rest of his life, murdering full-term babies, delivering them full-term and murdering them by putting a scissors in the back of their head and snipping their spinal cord. How does that happen? Because God's people are afraid to speak because they don't want to be labeled. John the Baptizer is labeled, and he speaks. We need to speak the moral will of God, and it is never going to be popular. Never. You're going to be unpopular, patently unpopular. God says in Zechariah, and this is all introduction to the story next week, which I can't wait to talk about. It's Macbeth. Herod and John the Baptist, it's Lady Macbeth all over, but we'll talk about that. Zechariah says, when God speaks through him talking about the messianic kingdom and the new covenant and the way that we're to bring the kingdom. Now listen here. We're closing with this, and it is so important for you as God's people to get this. And God says to those people, he says, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to bless you. I'm going to protect you. I'm going to keep the enemy from your gates. And he's going to make you flourish and et cetera, as God's people. And then he says, in the 8th chapter, he says, these are the things that you must do. Now listen to the 4 things that we must do, because these 4 things characterize people who are in a covenantal relationship with the Lord of hosts. That's you. Do you want to know what you have to do? He says, first of all, very first thing he says you need to do, speak the truth. Not the public opinion truthiness. Speak God's truth. God's opinion, God's stance on these issues. Speak it. It's important that people hear this from us. Oh, well, they know where I stand. They know I'm a Christian. No, they don't. No, they don't. I'll tell you, the line has become so blurred in evangelical Christianity today. I hear Christians, in parentheses, honestly arguing these social issues and saying things like, we have to keep an open mind on these things. Here's Herod, took his half-brother's wife, and John doesn't keep an open mind on this thing. Speak truth, number one. Number two, speak honest, but peaceful. He says, speak honest but peaceful judgments. Jesus did that. He says, this is the way it is. This is God's way. This is God's opinion. This is God's truth. Now, I'm just telling you. And Jesus says, I'm not going to judge you. He says, my words are going to judge you. Can we do the same? Speak it honestly. Speak truthfully. But do it peacefully. In the Nazareth rationality, when Jesus is in the synagogue and they attack him, he did not retaliate, he did not defend himself. We say it, we speak it, we hold the line. I would not recommend getting into power struggles, because God says, do it peacefully. He says, don't plot evil and don't lie. Those 4 things. Maybe that's something you'd want to write down. the four things that characterize people who are in a covenantal relationship with the Lord of hosts. Speak truth, number one. Number two, give honest and peaceful judgments. Number three, don't plot evil. And number four, don't lie. And you know what you do to people when you don't speak God's truth and you allow them to stay on that broad road? You're lying to them. You're giving truthiness. We're to be the city of truth, the New Jerusalem. Why is this important? Zechariah finishes up that eighth chapter with a great statement. What does the world need from you? What does the world need from me? Something they don't want. Yes. God says, on that day, when it all comes down, and when the end is near, he says, 10 men from 10 nations, men from all different nations and walks of life, will grab a hold of the robe of a Jew, and they will say, take us with you, because we have heard that God is with you. You see, the world needs to know that God is with us. Let me give you an example of when I was in school out in Chicago. I had a friend named Brian, and he was a big secularist. And this was when Roe v. Wade came in, and it was legalized in 1972. And I was out there at National in 1974. So it was just had become legal to murder. And Brian was a secularist, and he really came down on me about my stance on abortion. Made fun of me, said it was ridiculous. He would at times even mimic, he would talk for the fetus in the womb. This is how calloused, it just talk. He would make his voice like he was the fetus in the womb. And he says, Tim, what do you want? Do you want the fetus in the womb to say, I want to be born? Let us be born? And that went back and forth and back and forth. And I just didn't budge on that. Brian had no doubt where I stood. When I was a senior at National, Brian got into some trouble. Family trouble. Big. And Brian came to me. And he said, Tim, I want you to pray for me. I want you to help me with this. All those years, him ridiculing my stance and making fun of my stance, but when it came on that day, he wanted to grab a hold of my robe, so to speak, and take me with him, because he knew from my stance that God was with me. Why is it important for you to speak the truth? This is why. You do it for others. Believe me, no one's grabbing the robe of someone who is Christian light. And they may act like their friend, like Governor Christie thought, these are my friends. And they may think that you're cool, and they may invite you to do things with them. But when that day comes, like it came for Brian, they're going to look for the robe of one that they know God is with them, and they are going to ask you, what Brian asked me was, take me with you. Why? Because he had heard, like Zechariah says, they're going to grab your robe because they had heard that God is with you. What better reason than that for people to grab our robes? And what better way for us to demonstrate to the world that we hold the line regardless of public opinion polls, and God's right and God's wrong and God's morality has not changed. That's John the Baptist. And that's our call as the people of God. Let's pray. Pray your pray you bless these words, Lord. Give us the Holy Spirit-given courage to speak the truth. Amen.